Today on Next Level E-Commerce.
I'm on every website broker's list. I am always looking for deals. I am a junkie for deals. I am reading deal memos literally every day. Let's not kid ourselves today. You know, there are very, 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 very few things in life that are fully passive, okay? And if they are, you're running a lot of risk when you call something passive.
You're listening to Next Level E-Commerce. Each week, we feature inspiring stories from entrepreneurs who have taken their business to the next level. They share successes and failures and what kept them going when they felt like giving up. And here's your host, Isaac Smith.
You are in the right place at the right time. The e-commerce tide is lifting all boats. We'll look back on this age as one of tremendous opportunity. The only question is, what are you going to do with it? What's that saying? Fortune favors the bold. But when we're talking business and investing, literal fortunes, how should we take that? Take risk? I don't really think that's what it means, but I do believe it means not to be timid. And there's another saying, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. More on that another time. But today we're talking bold moves. My guest, returning guest I should say, Ian Bond is a listener favorite. He owns a portfolio of e-commerce businesses that he manages with his wife. And on the show today, Ian's going to share with us his outlook for e-commerce, buying businesses in 2021, and much, much more. In just a minute. If this is your first time listening, I know you're going to love this episode. But before you get sucked into it, do yourself a favor and hit that subscribe button on your phone so you don't miss the next amazing story. I am so excited. As you know, last week I hosted a free event to help business owners set their plan to make this year their best year ever, with tools to actually make it happen. I really didn't know what to expect, and the response from you guys was amazing. We had tremendous feedback, and I know we made a big impact. Over the next few weeks, I'm going to share with you some of my takeaways and even a few of the most popular talks from our speakers. That's going to be really cool, by the way. But today, I'm going to be honest with you guys, I'm exhausted. It is a lot of work putting on something like that, especially when you're crazy like me and you start planning it the week before everyone, or the week that everyone takes off for the holidays, which is actually what I did. Anyway, I wanted to leave you with a thought today. 2020, the wildest year we've ever known, was a test. I'm not kidding. It was a test. A test for what you will do in 2021. And if January so far has given us any indication, the craziness is not letting up just because we've said, okay, this is where the new year starts, right? This episode is airing on Tuesday, January 19, 2021, the day before the U.S. presidential inauguration. Here's the deal. Chances are there will be a good reason to be distracted, to get caught up in all kinds of arguments and negativity and just general chaos and distraction, right? But let me ask you this. How productive is that going to be? I was serious about a test. What are you going to do now? You've had a year of practice to get your shit together. Now the question is, can you focus on the things that are going to make a difference in your life? Or will you get caught up in the noise yet again? What you do tomorrow and the rest of the month will set the tone for the year. The choice is yours. All right, now we're going to move on with the show. You can find links to everything we discuss in our show notes at nextlevelecommerce.co/70 3. My guest today, Ian Bond, is making his return to the show almost exactly 1 year after his first episode. That was number 14 on December 31st of 2019. That episode continues to be a listener favorite. In fact, it's the most downloaded episode of the entire show. It's no wonder why, because it's all about buying businesses, which is something that I think a lot of us are really interested in. And Ian has purchased 20 e-commerce businesses over the last several years, and he continues to operate 8 of them. Today, we're going to get Ian's outlook for e-commerce in 2021, what the market for businesses has been like through the past crazy year, and his outlook for buying businesses in the coming year. And this guy's no slouch either. He spent 4 decades on Wall Street and asset management and wealth management, all the stuff that I don't understand. But he's going to make it all simple and tell us why it's such a great deal to be buying e-commerce businesses. Last thing, we get into a pretty deep conversation about high-ticket dropshipping. What is it and is it dead? I hear a lot of people saying dropshipping is dead, so are they right? So, let's get right into it. And now, please, welcome back, Ian Bond.
It's great to finally catch up. It's been a bit of a hectic year, and I know you've been very busy. I've been very busy. It's been too long since we talked, back 50 episodes ago, and I'm a big listener. So, I'm thankful to you in 2021 for providing me with all the positive inspiration. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate that so much. Thank you for the feedback.
So, you know, as you know, Isaac, in my day job, I'm a professional wealth manager, and I've built wealth management, asset management, and private banking businesses on 4 continents. And I've been doing this now for 4 decades. So,
wow.
So I have a long history of doing this and a long history of looking at emerging asset classes. And, you and I met, going back over 5 years ago when I first started to look at website investing, and I looked at all the different monetization models. And I realized, because 5 years ago, I was 57, and I realized, or when I started looking, I was 57. Actually, it was even a year before that, I started looking at website investing before I got into high-ticket dropshipping. And I realized that my corporate career and my corporate income would end long before my need for income would end, okay? And I also had a desire to do something other than go to a big building for the rest of my life. And, that at some point, you run out of runway, as I'm fond of saying. And I believed then, and I do believe now, that e-commerce is a mega trend. And throughout my entire career of 4 decades of investing, working on Wall Street, for firms like Goldman Sachs and Credit Suisse and Citibank, that if you're at the beginning of a big trend, you don't have to get it perfect. You just have to get in front of it. And if you get in front of it, and you're lucky enough to get in front of it and stay in front of it, and you can figure it out and you can do quite well. And so that's what I did. And my wife and I acquired 2 websites in October, November of 2015, and then subsequently have purchased more than 20. And we operate now 8 high-ticket dropshipping e-commerce websites and have built a comfortable 5-figure monthly semi-passive income using a team of outsourced workers, some who work full-time for us and others who we just contract with. And since we live in the Middle East, none of them live here. They all live other places. And I write about this on my blog, professionalwebsiteinvestors.com. And I just published my 2021 kind of predictions. And, I'm very, very positive on, I call e-commerce websites a screaming buy. And so I think that the reality is that there's just a ton of factors that are going to propel e-commerce going forward, and valuations are certainly going up. So that's where I shake.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, that's great. So on the first time you were on the show, we went through your story and we talked a lot about whether you should buy or build. We talked about the book that inspired you, Buy Then Build, which I've started listening to on audiobook. Have not finished. I need to. But anyway, so let's talk. So people who are interested in sort of the foundations, the fundamentals of buying businesses can go back and listen to that episode. So let's talk a bit about what's happened this year from your perspective. And of course, we're recording this at the very, very end of 2020. This will air in January. And so let's talk about how has this year been in sort of just in general for the market of buying e-commerce businesses? How have your businesses been impacted? Have you seen a lot more opportunity? Like, what's your perspective been throughout this year?
Yes. So I would say that it was very interesting, through the March timeframe, when kind of the United States woke up to the pandemic being real. And it happened a little earlier in Asia and the Middle East where I live. And, you know, we had a little bit of a heads up, but there was an aha moment. We saw it in our traffic numbers. The second half of March, traffic was down 20-25% in terms of kind of organic searches for stuff on our stores. And it was because people were Googling, kind of COVID virus. And from then to today, December 30th, it's been nothing but getting better and getting better. And it's been a very dysfunctional year in e-commerce because supply chains and businesses have been disrupted. And on the one hand, that's been a hard thing. Don't get me wrong, business is up spectacularly for sure. And there have been lots of out of stock situations. Our biggest supplier in one of our stores has been out of stock for 6 weeks right now on kind of what is a commodity good that people who are building homes buy, or remodeling homes buy. And the reality is that I think as we look into 2021, a couple of things will change. I think all of our suppliers who were working both remotely and in warehouse, they will likely come back to working in one place. We'll have the vaccine in place or vaccines in place, or it'll certainly be moving, it'll work more smoothly. The supply chains will be back together. And I think the really big trend for those of us, Isaac, that are in this high ticket world is that the reality is that e-commerce adoption in 1 year accomplished what it would have taken probably 10 years to accomplish. So people have been trained to buy online. And, we can thank Amazon for that. And, I have often referred to Amazon being like a pebble in the pond, the ripples go out. This year, it's a full rock. It's a boulder. Okay. And so it doesn't take much to get people to be comfortable. And nobody's going to go back. People buy, a couple $100 worth of stuff on Amazon. But did they spend $500 or $1,000 or $5,000 or $10,000 for some of our higher price stuff? Well, yeah, they do. And we're sold out on a lot of that stuff. And that's going to be more prevalent next year, but it's also not going to take, it's not going to have these, ridiculous advanced ordering times, because suppliers will be able to have their supply chains, kind of back repaired. And there could be a motor or some component part that goes into something that they weren't able to source from wherever they sourced it. We only work with U.S. suppliers, but they're the ones that source things overseas that we sell. And so this is going to be the year. 2021 is going to be the year. I mean, 2020 was great, frustrating. People very concerned about, obviously their own health as well as their loved ones and friends and family members and such. But this is going to be the year, and I think it's going straight up. And E-commerce as a percentage of retail sales is up, depending on what numbers you look at. You know, on a percentage of what it used to be, it's up 40 to 60%, depending on what you look at. Whether you look at the Department of Commerce or if you look at it with or without automobiles. If you look at it without automobiles, you know, I think e-commerce as a percentage of sales is in the high 20s right now. If you look at it with automobiles, it's more like 14 and a half percent of total retail sales. And that's up, as I say, you know, 40, 50, 60%, depending on what number you look at.
Yeah, it's amazing. And those of us in e-commerce, we know, we know it's not, yeah, people will go start going back to the stores, but some portion of their spending is going to remain where they've built this habit. And so that's going to be nothing but fantastic for e-commerce business owners.
But I would ask the question, I'd phrase the question and say, you know, like what percentage of people are actually going to go back and buy groceries, you know, for their staples, you know, I mean, paper towels, peanut butter, whatever the stuff that we have in the cabinet in there, you know, no one's going to go back and do that. I don't see it. And by the way, none of the, you know, the bulk of the people that we ordered from before, at least where I live, they didn't have the delivery capabilities. Now they do. And people are hooked. Yeah. And, you know, I did some work back on habit building several years ago. It doesn't take that long to build a habit. And I would say that ordering online, you know, is a bit of a habit. But, you know, let's be honest with this. We all used to say that people used Uber and Lyft because they wanted to save time. You know, we're somewhat lazy. I mean, this is, you know, you don't have to get out of your bathrobe to order groceries as a, you know, going into the store. The other thing about, you know, kind of the world that you and I have operated in is that we offer a selection of things that you can't get in your car and drive and go see. So you can get on the internet and see, you know, we sell bathroom vanities. We have 20,000 SKUs. You know, you can't see a selection like that, you know, within an hour of where you live if you wanted to. Right. So there are things that you're going to always do online, I think, going forward. So I'm very bullish that a large percentage of that adoption is going to stay. Certainly people will go back and go to stores and go to malls when they feel safe for lots of reasons, some of them being social. And I get it, and I'd like to do it. But I do think a lot of the buying decisions are going to stay, you know, online because people have developed this habit. And I think the experience is a lot better too. Amazon's raised the game. I mean, you know, you and I are both podcast guys, and Bill D'Alessandro said it the best. And he said, you know, Amazon not only, you know, was there, you know, this was the Olympics for e-commerce. Amazon stuck the landing. Okay. I mean, they continued to deliver like 2-day delivery during the pandemic. That's crazy. You know, some people said, well, it took 4 or 5 days in some places.
Yeah.
I mean, after give me a break, some hiccups, 4 or 5 days, there was a
still. Yeah.
Yeah. But by and large, it's been awesome. I mean, we get stuff same day, and I live, you know, I don't live anywhere near you. I live 11, 12 time zones from you. So, you know, it's amazing that you can get that kind of service. So for what it's worth, I think that e-commerce adoption is way up. And I think you'll have the supply chains repaired, and then you'll have a recovering economy too. And I think all those things bode well. The consumer in the United States is in really good shape, unlike the financial crisis, which was just bone crushing. The consumer has come out of this in very good shape. We've just had another stimulus package approved. And so, you know, people, you know, have money. And I think as they get they feel even a little bit sportier as they, you know, their jobs, you know, maybe they start going back to the jobs we already have, and, you know, they feel better about things. They may even extend themselves more. So this could continue for quite some time, I think.
Yeah. So let's talk about the actual market for buying businesses. Have you seen people buying and selling more or less in this crazy year? We're talking actually like in buying the business itself.
Yeah. So I would say that they're early on in kind of the summer and in the fall. There were some folks that had resuscitated businesses and had big spikes up, and they were trying to take advantage of those big spikes up in business. And there may have been at that time some question as to whether or not this e-commerce adoption was going to stick around and whether or not these businesses could replicate the numbers that they had put up. But I would say that there's been a dearth of businesses for sale, particularly in high ticket dropshipping, as well as e-commerce space. There have been a fair number of businesses in Amazon affiliate businesses, as well as Amazon FBA businesses that have been for sale. And, you know, let's just, you know, put it out there on the table. The multiples on earnings are going up, and they're going up dramatically. And, you know, we can go into that if you want, but there's a whole bunch of math behind that. And as well as, you know, a whole bunch of social reasons. But, you know, I think that 2021 in the e-commerce space is going to be better than 2020 for buying businesses, because you'll have more businesses for sale.
Yeah. As more people get kind of comfortable, things are going back to normal, we start to go back to our original plans. And maybe I had planned on selling this thing, but we had to get through this crisis, whatever. So let's talk. I know that I took a look at the article that you posted on your website today or yesterday or whenever. And I thought this is really great information as we go into 2021. So do you want to talk about what you see for e-commerce businesses, buying, investing, all of that? Let's lay it out for me, man.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, full disclosure here, I'm a bit of a nerd. Okay. So for four decades on Wall Street, I, you know, routinely read prospectuses and deal memos. And so I subscribe to all the website brokers services. And when something's for sale, I'm on the list, and I get the information, and I've signed non-disclosures, and, you know, so I look at it, and the numbers just kind of jump out at me because I've been doing this for a really long period of time. Okay. And, you know, Isaac, a year ago, you might have said, and this was true. Let's say a two, three, four year old high ticket dropshipping store that was just in six figures, that might have been listed at a 27 multiple of monthly earnings and probably would have sold at a 25 or maybe a 24 multiple of earnings, depending. I actually looked at some last fall, and there's a guy that I'm sure that you know that it listed on Empire Flippers, and I looked at his site. I just wasn't ready to pull the trigger. He sold at that in that range, and good quality site, and, you know, kind of the thing that you could buy then build, which, by the way, that's the book by Walter Dybel, you know, the kind of thing that you could really, you know, really work on and improve and season. I just had a client, I have a mentoring program, and I had just had a client that paid 28 multiple for a smaller site. Smaller sites tend to trade at a higher multiple. I think it was a steal. I think that business is going to be worth a lot more. I have not seen a quality, let's call it a four-year site, you know, come on the market since, you know, that was closed in November, and I haven't seen one of that quality come on the marketplace since. But, you know, and I mentioned this when we were talking earlier, the math is that if you just go back to 2018, 10-year U.S. Treasury interest rates were about 2.6%. Today, they're about 95 basis points. And so the math is that a stream of income is worth about 2.5 times more today than it was back then. Now, you know, I'm of the age, I'm 6 to 12 months from retiring. I have a Social Security. I don't feel 2.5 times wealthier. Okay. Nobody does. But the reality is, if you're going to try to create income in the real world, whether that's through a fixed annuity or through fixed income, that's the reality of it. And so these things are worth a lot more than they were 2 years ago.
I'm gonna jump in here. So for a dummy like me who doesn't know what the heck you're talking about, how does this make any sense? Why explain this to me, the you know, the listeners have got this stuff, right? They're much smarter than me. But explain it to me. Why is that the case?
Yeah, sure. Well, the yield to maturity on 10-year treasuries in the fall of 2018 was about 2.6%. It ranged in 2018. If you recall, the Federal Reserve Board was hiking interest rates, and it ranged kind of 2.5 to a little bit over 3% for most of the year. And it ended at about 2.6%. And so if you were to buy, put money, $100,000, $1 million, whatever, into U.S. Treasuries, you know, that was the rate that you could get. And you could get higher in corporate bonds, but let's just use the benchmark that everybody understands. And, you know, today with what's going on because of the pandemic and because of economic activity, that rate is about 95 basis points. And so kind of the amount, in order to generate the amount of income that you could generate spending whatever you're going to spend at 2.6%, you obviously are going to have to put in about 2.5 times that or more, you know, with the 10-year treasury at 95 basis points. And I published on professional website investors, my blog, a graph of the 10-year treasury over the last 30 years. And it's declined in business cycles for 4 decades. So it's not going back up, you know, it's probably not going to go back up to 2.5 to 3 anytime soon. Most people don't think it's going to get, you know, much above 1%, you know, for the next while. The Federal Reserve Board is going to keep interest rates really easy to try to get the economy back up and running. And, you know, so people with cash are looking for places to put cash, and they're going to look at more exotic things than treasuries, but that's the benchmark I use. The other major dynamic.
Let me jump in a little, the idea is if you have some cash that you want to invest, if you want to invest it and receive a certain stream of income, if you're going to the traditional, the bonds, you're going to have to put in a lot more than you did before to get that same stream. That's what you're talking about. So people with this money are now, they're not doing that. They're looking in more creative ways. And so this is something that I've seen, just, you know, housing prices, you know, we can talk more globally, which I don't want to get into because I'm not at all the person who should be talking about this, but I love listening to Ray Dalio and folks like that. I don't understand them, but I love listening. And he's talking about how cash is trash and bonds and all of this. So this is essentially the same conversation, but focused on a little different area. So those folks who would have before been satisfied with whatever option, the traditional option, they're now looking for alternative assets to invest in, like e-commerce businesses.
Yeah. So, you know, it all starts from that framework. You're spot on. It all starts from, what is the reference? If, you know, in the 90s, you could roll out of bed in the morning and renew a fixed deposit, a CD, for 6, 7, 8%. Okay. Didn't take much effort to make money, really good money.
I'll jump in on that as well. You know, I remember in early high school days, some of my more industrious friends, I'm thinking of one guy in particular who we were like 14 and he was going out and getting a busboy job at some restaurant, and he was, you know, making a little bit of money, and he'd go put it in the CD. And I always thought, wow, you're making money, man. Woo, Mr. Rich guy over here. And that was a normal thing. That's what people did. But nowadays, a CD doesn't do anything for you, right?
No, they're in low single digits. Okay. Mm-hmm. So Isaac, in, you know, the United States is somewhat spoiled, because globally, you know, I'm going to need a drum roll here. Globally, there's $17 trillion of debt that has negative interest rates.
Cool.
So you put in and get back, you know, less than what you what you get back less than what you put in. So so it's a big it's a big deal. It's a big deal. Yeah, it's a big deal.
So this is a partially explaining why you're talking about the multiples going up for e-commerce businesses. So, but let's lay it out. While these are going up, you're still saying this is a screaming deal.
Yeah.
Let's talk about
that. So let me just get my numbers right here. At a 25 times multiple, and just take $1,000 of earnings and multiply times 25, the cash flow yield is just under 50%. You're getting $12,000 a year and paying $25,000. So it's a little under 30%. At a 30 multiple of monthly earnings, you know, it's a little bit less than a 40% cash flow yield annually. Okay, annually. And, you know, and then, you know, I think where multiples are today are 35 to 40 times monthly earnings. And, you know, I think they're going up from there. Only one of the factors propelling that is the, you know, kind of the math that we mentioned with interest rate. Then there's the whole, partly the need for yield, which is people like me that are nearing retirement need yield, need income. So then, Isaac, the other dynamic is that there are people that have, you know, now become accustomed to working from home. Okay. And they're saying, well, I'm going to work for the man, or, you know, what about working for myself? And, you know, you've been, you know, my idol. in the sense that you've done that for a long period of time, but that's new to a lot of people. So that's a dynamic. And so, you know, when you think about it, first of all, you have, you know, think of a stool, how many legged stool, right? One leg of the stool is this e-commerce adoption we talked to. The second is just the math. Okay. The math is favoring valuations being higher. Then there's the twin demographic things of people like myself retiring and needing cash. And then there's a whole movement to, you know, not going back to the office or working for yourself, or, you know, now that you've tasted this. And so I think that the future is incredibly bright for, you know, kind of the website investing world. And particularly, as you know, I'm very much a believer in physical goods e-commerce. So I think that this is the place to be.
Yeah. So let's take it back a little bit. Well, let's go forward. So for those who are listening, you're going, all right, last year we talked about why to do this and the beginnings of the how. So let's talk about, okay, if we're ready to actually take action and go out and do some investing this year, is there anything, like, what are some of the thought processes that maybe a little bit different this year, or has the market shifted? We've talked about valuations going up. Yeah. If somebody's thinking to themselves, okay, I'm ready to do this. Maybe there's someone like me who built a business and has that running and has either sold it or maintained it. And they're like, I need more e-commerce in my life, but I don't want to go through that again. Let's be smarter about it this time and let's invest. Sure. So let's walk through like the 2021 version of how you would go about this.
So let me just start with what I think is the foundation, which would have been true 5 years ago, and it's certainly true today, which is that if you're going to be an investor in, an owner of, a buyer of e-commerce websites, you should understand the fundamentals of how they're built. And so you and I met in a community where we were learning how to build these things. Okay. And we both built e-commerce high ticket drop shipping websites. So I think that's foundational. I mean, I think that if you're going to be an investor in real estate, you know, you need to understand the basics of real estate, why things are built, how they're built. I mean, you wouldn't go into the neighborhood where you're building your home and put a 12-unit apartment building or something like that. There are lots of things that you learn in those programs that are really foundational to owning and operating, investing in and owning and operating businesses. And conversely, you know, if you are you know, as you mentioned, if you are a builder, you should be looking like I have done at all of the great websites that are for sale because they're doing something right. They're for sale. So you should copy the smart stuff they're doing. You know, if they've got a green button, use the green button, or, you know, I'm being facetious, but whatever it is that they're doing, you know, if you're a student of the numbers or if you're a student of the designs or the theory, you can learn a lot as a builder for websites that are for sale. So what's different this year? I think there's a massive, massive shift. And I was lucky enough, I think, to spot this as being something I thought would be important a couple of years ago. But there's a massive, massive shift for people that are looking for to investigate, looking for informational content. And I think that the I'm a member of half a dozen e-commerce communities and probably four or five communities of builders of e-commerce websites, high-ticket dropshipping websites. And, you know, they mostly focus on using Google Shopping and that's about it. They don't teach you about search engine optimization and content strategies. And this kind of all came to me in an epiphany 2 years ago when I was at the Empire Flippers retreat. I think it was their fourth retreat or their fifth retreat in Phuket. And I listened to Matt Diggity from Diggity Marketing, who's a big name and an authority in affiliate marketing and really an SEO guy, and has three different businesses that are all based on content. And, you know, if the folks that cannot afford Google Shopping are using content to drive traffic to their sites, why are the guys that can afford it not using this tool? And that, you know, kind of hit me like a ton of bricks. So I have focused on providing high value content for people. And we now drive around 70% of our traffic using, you know, content, and we're not paying for it. We pay for it once when we write it, and then it, you know, it lives forever. And we don't have to worry about the price of ads going up. And, you know, I've owned websites where the cost of a brand, you know, I bought a website 5 years ago, the top brand in that we were, you know, it was the guy that sold it to us was early, got on a great brand. It was easy to advertise that brand. It was efficient to advertise that brand. And then when there became, you know, many, many more sellers, the keywords that we were competing for, the cost per click became prohibitive and we couldn't afford it anymore. Well, you know, with good content, that should live forever. So I think there are some twists in this. And, you know, that's just one of them that I threw out there.
Wow. 70%. Good for you, man.
Yeah.
I never went deep enough into that in my journey. I was still on the, I guess, the bottom of the funnel treadmill, as you might say. But that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very interesting. As you should mention that because, you know, we do write content for the bottom of the funnel, but the place where we hook people as, you know, early on is at the top of the funnel. And I have what I call a cheap click strategy, for lack of a better word. You know, if I can get a cheap click, I use strategies that get me clicks cheaply. And those top of the funnel content strategies are cheap. And then, you know, as you well know, retargeting on Google, Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, I didn't talk about Pinterest, but I will. Those are cheap ways to stay in front of people. And when we look at the kind of the conversion data and you see that somebody visited your site 3 weeks ago and came back 12 times before they purchased, you know, and by the way, they came back as a direct visit. So when I said 70% of it's organic, that does not include the direct visits because I have to attribute that probably to the retargeting, I think.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think that's and you're seeing, interestingly, you're seeing on a lot of podcasts now, I'm a big podcast listener. There's now e-commerce SEO is a thing now. This wasn't something anyone talked about, you know, a year or two ago. I mean, there were very few people that were really making a living, you know, doing that. A lot of affiliate SEO for sure, but not for e-commerce. It was not nearly a thing.
Yeah. Well, that's been my experience as well. So let's talk about, you know, people who are investors or people who want to invest might be thinking about, well, now we're going beyond investing. You're talking about like, I got to put some work in here. So for those who really do want to stay in the owner's seat, I know we talked in our last interview about how you've built a team and what their roles are and what your role is relative to everything. So how does somebody stay in the owner's seat and not get lost in the weeds? And I'll be honest, that's what I did for way, way, way too long. And, you know, it's something that I have to be very thoughtful of, because I learned that lesson kind of in a painful way. Now going forward, of course I'm repeating it, but I'm trying to be a little bit more thoughtful of what I'm doing and what the team is doing.
Yeah, look, I think most people would say that they spent way too long doing those things. I'm working with a fellow who actually runs a business for Amazon, and after he closed on the website that he was closing on, you know, we had a call, and he had this aha moment where he realized that when you could get someone from the Philippines to do customer service that actually knew the website and all the idiosyncrasies of the website and the business way more than he did, he just said, like, you know, how do I get another dozen people like this? You know, I mean, you realize how leveraging it is on your time, particularly things like customer service, which aren't expensive, right? And so, you know, it's crucial to solve for that. And it's something that you have to start on really early. You know, we woke up to this, you know, we live 9 hours ahead of New York. And so when we bought a website, we knew that we weren't going to be awake when the United States was shopping. And so we pretty much had to kind of, you know, commit to this early on. Maybe that made us lucky. I can tell you when it became painfully aware to us is after we trained someone and she didn't work out and we found that she was cheating on us and working for somebody else. And then my wife had to go and retrain the next person. And she said, I'm never doing that again. I'm going to create processes and procedures and put them into software like Sweet Process or Loom or something like that. And, or, you know, even use Google Docs that when this happens, you do that, you know. And you know, video works really, really, really well, particularly with people that are accustomed to working in call centers in the Philippines in the middle of their night. They don't really want to read a PDF. And if you can have a video recording, you can help them a lot, help them help you. And, you know, we all know that it's not even an 80-20, it's probably 90-10. 90% of the problems come from max 10% of the things that arise. So you can solve, you know, an enormous number of things with that, you know, and then you realize that there aren't that many things that are really mission critical that can't be solved, you know, kind of overnight or something like that. But if you can solve it, you try to solve it. But I think of it very much as being the CEO. This is not a passive income game, but it's darn near semi-passive when you look at the amount of work that I do. I mean, I do what I like to do. I call this like the e-com CEO. Okay. I'm not the outside investor. I'm not the chairman who's playing golf. I'm the CEO, but I'm doing the kind of stuff that I like to do. And I use, you know, kind of Dan Kennedy's who, not how, right? Who do I get to do it? Not how do I do it? And so, you know, I like looking at the numbers every day. I like looking at the spreadsheets. I like thinking about the strategic stuff, right? And so that's the kind of stuff that gets me going. And I don't want to sit back. And by the way, you know, if you have a big equity portfolio, you know, you were thinking about that in March and April, and you're thinking about it today. I mean, you know, so let's not kid ourselves today. You know, there are very, 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 very few things in life that are fully passive. Okay. And if they are, you know, you probably ought to make them a little less passive and be a little bit more active in them. You're running a lot of risk when you call something passive.
Well, that's a very interesting point. And it's something that I've experienced in maybe not such an explicit way, but people very often talk about passive income. They're one of the first places I started getting my information about online business was called Smart Passive Income with Pat Flynn.
Sure.
Of course, everybody's familiar with him. And that's what everybody's chasing. And of course, you know, the course that you and I learned how to do drop shipping, or at least I did, and that's where we met, was dropship lifestyle, right? And so this pursuit of passive, truly passive income is something that everybody wants, right? Who wouldn't want passive income? But I haven't seen it. And of course, I have never been in the true investor space like you have on Wall Street for decades and decades. But when it comes to owning a business, yeah, I've started to become very skeptical, if not outright suspicious, that of this concept of passive income. Now, of course, like you say, you can do little work and you can do the stuff that you love that doesn't feel like work. But this idea that somehow you're just going to magically get income into your bank account, you're not going to have to think about it, I think that's a fairy tale.
Look, the choice that I see is that you have time freedom, you know, because you don't have to do it, you know, between certain hours in the day, and you have location freedom, but you're going to have to do something, right? You know, and I do the things I like to do. I don't do the things I don't like to do. And I, you know, and because we live overseas, we're not slave to the inbox such that if something comes in from a supplier or from a customer, that we have to respond in the next 5 or 10 minutes like our team does. Okay. And so, you know, that's a great trade-off. Now, I want to be engaged. I'm 63. I want to be engaged. I like being engaged. I like doing strategic stuff very much. You know, but I do think that that you know, kind of passive income is a bit of a myth. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, you can have time independence and you can have location independence, but you got to do some work, some kind of work, whether that's mental work. You know, we're not out, you know, doing construction or something like that. I mean, that's hard. That's really hard work. Okay. And you know, and there are some people that don't want to manage people. And so then they've got, you know, they don't want to manage people. So then they, you know, that's a little bit more work for them to have a team than it is for people that, you know, that don't mind managing people, you know. And, you know, we don't want to, you know, we're doing fine. And, you know, we found a great size for us. And I don't think we're going to have the desire to scale up and be, you know, take on risks that are huger than we're taking right now. And, you know, the beauty of this business model is we didn't have any financial risk in the last year either. So, you can't say that in virtually every other, you know, online business model. There were people that were carrying inventory that some of it was stuck overseas. Some of it was on a boat on the way in from China. Amazon was prioritizing, rightly so, they were prioritizing things that were for people's health, and they weren't putting stuff into their warehouses. You know, people owned warehouses, you know. Now, we don't capture the margins they capture, but we don't have the financial, the risk they have. You know, that is handled by our suppliers, for whom we are very grateful, and we try to be great partners too. So, you know, that to me is a much, much better trade-off than, you know, kind of taking those kinds of risks.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So.
Hey, we're going to take a quick break, and I've got a question for you. It's the new year. And that means tax season is upon us. So here's the question. Are you going to be ready on time this year? You remember what happened last time, right? That was a mess. The extensions, the stress, simply wondering how much you're going to have to pay. Don't go through that again. Get your stuff done on time. That means having your bookkeeping completed through the end of the year. And if you don't want to do that, and I'm guessing you don't, unless you love pain, you should just have my team do it. We're a team of e-commerce experts. That's right. We only do bookkeeping for e-commerce companies. And so we know your business model very well. And we know exactly what we need to do to get yours done. If that sounds like we'll save you a lot of headache, just schedule a free call with me. There's no pressure. We'll figure out exactly what you need and how we can get it done. So to schedule a free call, just go to nextlevelecommerce.co/books and schedule a call with me. Again, nextlevelecommerce.co/books. Do it soon before your tax person starts asking questions and then more questions, and then you're repeating that whole experience again. We look forward to making tax season easier for you. And now, back to the show.
I'm curious what you think about this. This is something that I've been thinking about, is being the business owner. And we can talk a lot about, you know, what, how you build your team, you know, all of that. Like, that could be its own series of episodes.
For
but
sure.
I'm thinking about, what about the idea of finding operating partners and staying in your, maybe not necessarily the purely the owner box, but maybe you have limited, you have a limited role, and you have, whether it's an operating, whether a partner or a general manager who has some equity, some skin in the game, some vested interest in making sure this thing continues to grow, and building a portfolio that way. What do you think about that?
I actually got close to executing something like that. I worked with a fellow last year in 2000 and end of 2018 for about a year. And we were improving, building and improving three stores, four at one point. And, you know, he was virtually full time doing, you know, kind of all of those things, literally sourcing suppliers, managing the VA team, and all of that. About the only thing he didn't do were the financials. And then, you know, we have some legacy business that was our original businesses that, you know, we were overseeing, but he was working full time doing that. And the reality for him was that the equity piece was riskier and didn't fit his financial needs as well, which was fine. We tried that. And he came, you know, to me and said, you know, I'd rather work for you rather than, you know, be a partner, but things won't change. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay. And so, you know, we reversed that. I literally bought him out of that after I gave him in return for equity. In return for his work, I gave him equity, and, you know, it worked beautifully. I think it's a great model if you can find somebody who's really talented and can do, you know, kind of lots of things. And he was working on, you know, kind of building the stores from, you know, kind of, what I would call minimum viable level to, you know, once we knew that they were in big categories that we could succeed in, we kind of pushed all the chips to the table and said, okay, let's execute a growth plan. And he executed that. It worked great. He has subsequently gone on, we separated, and he kind of runs an agency, and his focus now much more on SEO. That's probably the thing that had, you know, where he added an enormous amount of value. It was highly scalable to him. And I still work with him and pay him a fair amount monthly to, you know, to help us with that portion of investing in our stores. And so it's a great concept. The question is size and scale and finding the right person.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, well, that's really interesting. Well, that takes me to my next question.
Great.
You've been talking about how you're going to be soon full-time on your own businesses as you've mentioned, you do have a job. You work an entirely different thing. You've been in investing and finance and all of that, but that time is coming to a close, and you'll be on your business. So what's next for you? What are you going to be doing?
Well, I probably didn't go. I may not have been as brutal about this, but I realized back in 2013, 2014, that, my corporate career would end long before my need for income would end. And that, after doing this for a long period of time, after doing what I do in my day job for a long period of time, I wanted to do something more entrepreneurial, which, allowed me time freedom and location freedom. And, we've run our businesses from vacations in Portugal and Thailand and Malaysia and all different places. And it's really a wonderful thing. And it never stops. And you don't trade time for money anymore. And as I mentioned, you do have to do the work, but you can do it either in spurts or you can do it when you want to, not necessarily tied to the clock. And, I can't tell you that I have it perfectly scoped out. I have taken this step where I do mentor some people, a small number of people that are kind of like-minded. And I enjoy that because I meet people that are very accomplished, and I like that very much. And I have produced a course that is, very focused on building high ticket dropshipping stores in conjunction with International Living Magazine, which is marketed through them. And I have a group of people that I work on that, I'm helping them build stores just like you and I started building back in the day. And that's been a lot of fun. I really enjoy that. So I enjoy this whole world very much. I'm certainly not going to go sit around and do nothing. I mean, exactly. And you want to be careful not to overcommit, and it may, kind of things may change, and you don't know what opportunities will come up next. I've thought of a bunch of crazy things that I won't mention because they're crazy, but I think about it, but I think I'll do the proper thing, which is, kind of ultimately end my corporate career, spend a period of time thinking about this. And between now and then, I'll kind of mull these things over. So I don't have it sorted out, but I'm looking for more interesting things. I'm very jealous of my time, and I wanted to participate in your summit, and I appreciate the Survive and Thrive Summit, and I appreciate that offer, but I just didn't have the time. And so it'll be great to have the time, to be honest with you.
Yeah. So key thing that I did not hear was I'm going to go out and buy 10 new businesses.
Well, we're operating 8 right now, and we've purchased over 20, and I think about selling something when it gets to the right price. I am literally always looking to buy things. So every Monday when Empire Flippers, releases their for sales, I wait for that. That comes about dinner time, my time. I'm looking at that. I'm on every website brokers list. I am always looking for deals. I am a junkie for deals. I am reading deal memos, literally every day. I have an active dialogue with at least 4 website brokers right now, where I have people that I talk to there, and I get great information from them. And I think, Isaac, what will happen is that I'll see something that might be a little bit too big for me, or where I can, or somebody will either have capital or time, or as you mentioned, have skills. And then I'll get creative and try and put something together. The other thing I've done is I've gone up the food chain, particularly in one of our stores, to source product. And I've thought about doing that and building a brand around an industry that I know well. And I just can't get myself there. I've been looking at that for the better part of a year. I just can't get myself there, putting that capital into that. I like these capital light businesses. And by the way, so does the stock market. These capital light businesses are really, wonderful things. Yes, the margins are bigger, when they're capital heavy. But, you know, owning an airline, a hotel, you know, a cruise ship, no thanks, you know, not it, you know, or a whole bunch of inventory that's stuck someplace, you know, doesn't fit the risk profile that I want to have right now. So for what it's worth, you know, capital light.
Cool. Well, before we wrap up, I thought it would be, do you want to talk through, let's give the listener who is like, okay, it's a new year, let's make some things happen. I want to either get in maybe for the first time as a buyer, maybe for the second time, maybe like I was describing this person who is one now, like me, has built and now is ready to get more into their portfolio. Let's talk through some sort of, I guess, broad strokes. What are the steps? What would you look for?
Yeah.
So in a business today.
Yeah. So if you're starting from scratch, you probably need to learn the fundamentals of building these stores, and whether or not you actually build a store. If you don't build a store, understanding those fundamentals is really important. I've had people reach out to me and say they want to spend $500,000 and they've got a cockamamie idea. And I said, like, you know, you're missing so much stuff that, you know, I can't possibly, you know, suggest that you do what you're proposing. If you're at the point where you do have some background knowledge, get on all of the lists for the website brokers and be and have it narrowed down exactly what it is you want to look at. If you want to look at e-commerce sites, specifically high ticket drop shipping sites, don't waste your time looking at you know, kind of all of the other things that kind of come across the table. You know, be very, very focused and look at as many as you possibly can. You know, with one broker alone, before we bought our first website, I had placed 53 deposits, you know, cash. I had a bookkeeper that was saying, what is going on with you and these people? And you know, and I said, don't look at that. Okay. You know, I'm on top of that. So I looked at lots of deals to find the right first deals. You know, you have to really immerse yourself into this. Now, I have something that I call the venture capital approach, which is, you know, don't spend all of your money on one site. You know, take, you know, allocate some money and buy a site that, you know, that you believe in once you understand what it is to make something work. And you know, make sure that you have plenty of dry powder, because, you know, like venture capitalists buy multiple built businesses, invest in multiple businesses early on, and one or two do really well. The other ones might do middling, or you could lose all your money. This is an emerging asset class. There's risk involved. And, I often say that when you're dealing with website brokers, when you're alone, you know, you're like that guy at the poker table who doesn't know who the sucker is, right? You should, in this day and age, the gold standard is reaching out and getting good advice from somebody, getting mentorship. It's always been the gold standard. You can read stuff, you know, all day long, but, you know, to talk to somebody who knows what they're doing, you know, people that you know, people that I know, you know, to try to get some of their, you know, kind of their cranial fluid, you know, that's a very, very valuable thing if you're going to plunk down real money on something. And so try and get somebody that you know, you can, you know, maybe learn the ropes from. Don't put all your money in the same place. Get on every list. Look at lots of deals. There's just no substitute for approaching it that way, in my opinion.
Awesome. And would you consider, would you try to do creative finance, or I call it creative, but, you know, seller financing, or do you do anything creative, or are you an all cash upfront kind of guy?
We have done some creative financing, lower price transactions. People just generally want their money. And so if you can find something where you think you have an angle that, you know, and I've paid full cash and I've paid, you know, some now and some a little bit later, but, or, you know, mostly you'll probably do better giving, you know, all of it up front, but just not as much as maybe somebody's asking for, depending on kind of what the market is. It's not that kind of market right now. Right now is a full cash market. Mm-hmm. So I just don't think you're going to see a lot of people right now that are going to be too creative, you know, in lower priced websites, if you're looking at a lower priced site, unfortunately, you know, but that is what it is.
Well, that's good to know. And we're coming up to the end. You know, I'm just realizing there's one aspect of this that we haven't really mentioned, which is another, you mentioned like three reasons that multiples are increasing. And we haven't mentioned the fact that institutional money is coming in now to e-commerce in general, which is something that was not true maybe even a year ago.
Yeah.
That's entirely different. If you listen to the Empire Flippers guys or anybody else, they talk about these funds that are being put together and they're buying up blocks whether it's FBA businesses or I don't know. Are those folks interested in high ticket drop shipping stores?
Mostly it's, as you mentioned, FBA businesses. They're building a cluster or, you know, collection of FBA brands and then content sites. And it's interesting. I listened to Dom Wells at OnFolio is the one who raised the money at 12% to buy other content sites. And he says that he's going to focus on affiliate, not Amazon affiliate, but other affiliate types of relationships, and that he intends at some point to allocate some amount of money to e-commerce. And so, but his skill set there is a content skill set. So I think most of those are FBA or content related sites. And I think the bulk of the content sites are ones that are monetized through AdSense or Ezoic or, you know, the ad guys, as opposed to Amazon affiliate sites. I mean, you know, Amazon, you know, in March, you know, last March, you know, cut by 60% their commissions. And I happen to believe that they may go to zero. So I don't know why Amazon actually needs people sending them traffic. Okay. But, you know, that may be an outlying philosophy, and they're selling like hotcakes. So I'm wrong every day because people are buying, and these things are doing very well with Amazon's new, much lower program. So it is what it is. So, but the institutional money is a whole new factor. It, you know, they stay at fairly high levels, you know, in terms of, you know, they're looking at sites that are $1 million, you know, and up in many cases. You know, they're not dipping below because they just can't find it. They just really can't get it scalable. So then there's a layer of people that are more entrepreneurial that are looking below $1 million. And so you may see more of those, and people are trying to figure out how can they get scale around doing that. And you can, as you know, get scale, particularly in drop shipping around all kinds of operational things, you know, all of the stuff that's below cost of goods sold on the income statement, you can get scale. And so it's, you know, it works out really, really well.
We're coming to random questions of Isaac's curiosities. And here's another thing, because I think a lot of people are listening who are not necessarily from the dropshipping world. They're maybe doing private labeling, maybe they're selling through Shopify, maybe they're selling on Amazon, but I don't know what portion are into the high ticket dropshipping. And that's of course what we've been talking about primarily for this whole conversation. And I thought I would address that. I know what my opinion is, but I thought I'd ask you. I hear a lot of people talking, I guess maybe not a lot, but oftentimes when I hear dropshipping mentioned in business circles, they talk about this as a dying business model or something that is not defensible, something that won't be around for much longer. And just for the conversation's sake, let's just take that low ticket stuff off the table. That's not what I want to talk about. But yet you are talking all about how great high ticket dropshipping is. And of course, that's the world that I came from. And you're very bullish on, you know, what's happening this year and where it's going to go. So what would you say to somebody who has that perspective?
Well, you know, with regards to the low ticket stuff, that's not at all the world that I operate in.
Yes. Well, so, we don't need to even discuss.
And so you know, the high ticket world, you know, will exist because when, you know, it's when I think of the retail, the online retail world, I think that there's essentially three tiers. The first tier is, let's say, under a couple hundred dollars, where people just go to Amazon and buy it. Okay. You know, it's just too easy. You know what you want. You just go there. They get it to you same day or tomorrow. Okay. I mean, nobody's going to compete with Amazon. They win. For working families that want to pick it up at their local market, Walmart is going to provide that. Now, between $200 and $500, you're going to have people that do require some information. And this is where the affiliate sites do well, right? So I wanted to buy, you know, some cheap earbuds for my daughter back before the Apple earbuds got so cheap. And, you know, I explored that on both blogs and on YouTube. Okay. So you can go get information and then those guys send you to Amazon or to some place to buy it. But above $500, there is a huge need for expertise, advice, and information. And Amazon doesn't want to do that. I mean, if you've ever been to an Amazon product page and everyone listening to this has, they're horrible. I mean, the best they do is people that bought this also bought that. Okay. You know, you've built product pages. I mean, you know, the first thing that I tell people to do is focus on your product pages and particularly, you know, 80-20, focus on your best sellers product pages and have the best ones on the internet. And so we provide, you know, content, we provide advice, we provide expertise. We're specialists in these very narrow yet pretty expensive niches for people. And, you know, wait, you know, the guy at Home Depot, let's say you do household, like we do some household, the guy at Home Depot is responsible for three aisles. You know, he sells aluminum ladders. He sells, you know, paint buckets and he sells bathroom vanities and he's got three bathroom vanities. We've got, you know, thousands, you know, on our websites and we know them backwards and forward. We can deal with your contractor and we've done, you know, we have all the schematics, you know, that's what we do. This, you know, the where we play is not interesting to anybody else. Okay. And, you know, so I think, you know, I think people that kind of, you know, pick on this business model, you know, I think the margins are certainly something that aren't comparable to FBA or to manufacturing your own stuff. I get that, but neither is the business risk, as I just mentioned earlier. So, you know, I get that. And that's a great trade-off for me. But I think that we provide a ton of value. And I know when we talk to our suppliers that, you know, they value us because during the pandemic, when, you know, all of these physical stores that do e-commerce as, you know, their second or third thought every day, you know, we were in there, you know, kind of every day dealing with them, you know, sometimes pre-purchasing things, lining up purchases that were going to be delivered at a later date. You know, I think if you talk to most suppliers, they're looking to build their e-commerce business, you know, their online business. Most suppliers are, and they're not trying to build it by, you know, dealing with, you know, kind of the old line retailers. And, you know, I think that there's a huge resurgence in this business and happens to be probably the oldest retail business model. So, you know, I don't think that there's anything but a very exciting future for it, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
To be, you know, if you deal in things that are big and heavy, like we do, okay, it makes zero sense to ship them twice. So right. If the supplier is, pick a place where the supplier is, Port of Los Angeles or wherever they are, you're not going to ship that twice to get it to the customer. That's inefficient from every way. So then that supplier, you know, is essentially running a desk and they're arranging for shipping already. If they do that for Home Depot, if they do that for Ian Bond and family or Isaac Smith and family, they don't really know or care. Okay. And, you know, we're easy to deal with and we have incredible content. We do diversify their risk a little bit. You know, we've all seen some pretty big retailers go out of business because their physical business dragged them down. And so I would push back really hard on the notion that that high ticket dropshipping is going to be anything other than, you know, kind of be in favor. And I'm really excited to see some more sites come on the marketplace because I think it'll be proved out in the multiples. I think this idea of being capital light and I think the ability to, you know, kind of participate in some of the strategies we talked about earlier, particularly around providing great content, because people are going online and really searching. You know, I could show you our online traffic has been amazing. And I think that's proof positive that this is going to be kind of what the strategy of the future will look like. But I don't think you can just, you know, kind of do a crummy job and, you know, not provide great customer service. You know, you've got to provide awesome customer service, you know, incredible experience online, great expert advice, and then content to back it all up. So
I love it. And I love your perspective that it's a capital light. You've said that several times. I love that you come at it from an investor's perspective, which is very different from mine. And personally, I hear these comments and honestly, I just don't care. Right? I know what I know and I do what I do. And, you know, that's the rest doesn't matter really. But if people are genuinely curious, like why I'm still interested in drop shipping when other people are saying it's no good, you hit on a lot of reasons. But I think, you know, we hear a lot these days about D2C or DTC, right? Direct to consumer. That's the big buzzword. And I don't know that the reality is as buzzy as that. Those three letters. But, you know, this idea that the internet is democratizing, right? Everything is going direct to the consumer. And so a lot of these brands are building direct relationships. However, I think it's important to note what you said. These are mostly the brands that are under a certain price. Yeah. When you get into, like, you're talking about bathroom vanities or whatever. These manufacturers, these suppliers, they're really good at manufacturing. They're really good at creating a great product. They're not so great at communicating with the customer in ways that the customer understands. They're not so great at the sales process. They're no good at advertising. Some of them are good at brand building.
Zero interest. They have zero interest. I reached out to, we have a supplier and we're doing about 100 orders a month. And I got nervous and I'm going like, you know, this is getting to be a lot of orders per month with these guys. And so I said, you know, maybe, you know, and this is in the household space. So I would compete against, I don't know, Home Depot and I don't know, kitchen and bath appliance. I don't know who. But some big Lowe's physical stores, right? And I'm thinking, well, you know, I was a little bit, you know, suspicious. So I looked into getting a 3PL because we know what we sell from them. And I figured, look, I'll buy inventory, send it, and then I'll ship it on my own. And I'll look just like one of these guys. You know, I'll no longer look like a drop shipper because I'll be taking inventory. And I spoke to the national sales manager, the head of distribution. And he says, well, we really only have, you know, one of our SKUs. And this is a big, these guys are huge. Only one of our SKUs really can we reship. All of the other ones, you know, we couldn't send them to you. They couldn't be stored someplace else. And I said, well, like, you know, I want to buy inventory. You know, how much, for example, is Home Depot buying? He says, well, they don't buy anything. Hmm. They don't buy any inventory from us. I said, they don't buy any inventory at all. He said, no, we ship all their orders. I said, so you ship all of their orders just like you ship all of my orders? He said, yeah, the same. Okay. Mm. And I said, is there anyone that's buying inventory? He said, we have a small but growing business of boutique stores that will buy some inventory. He said, but 90% plus of our business is all done off of our desk that does that. Okay.
Wow.
And they are essentially the back office for Home Depot and Lowe's and you know, kind of all of the people that would sell these products. okay, and us, and we know them well, and they know us well. We're on their where to buy page. Mm. Now, if they didn't like us, they wouldn't put us. You know, there. The only people that get some inventory are Amazon. And he said, and quite frankly, he said that they're a pain to deal with. We don't really need them, So, you know, there's that price point where, you know, people don't buy it from Amazon.
And I would say, I don't know the supplier, but this is a large supplier.
Yeah.
They are not at all interested in learning how Google Shopping ads work.
Oh, gosh.
They're not at all interested in learning how content marketing, affiliate marketing. They don't want anything to do with that.
No. They're thinking about their supply chain every day and what's going out the door, what SKUs they need to have, and you know when it's going to come in from the factory and which factory produces what, because they're in different countries that they have zero interest in doing the retail trade, zero interest. And you let slip on a prior podcast issue, and I didn't know this, Isaac. You let slip the name of the store that you sold.
Oh, I talked about it plenty. Yes.
Okay. So yeah. I went and looked, and I can't imagine that any of those people are selling DTC. Okay.
So no, they don't want it.
No. Don't. No interest. It's a different business. It's entirely a different business. Matter of fact, we have two of our websites sell stuff that come through distributors. They don't even want to deal with, they don't even want to have a desk that does what that other company does. They deal with a distributor, and the distributor handles that. Okay. And you know, they're very, what do I want to say? They're very specialized manufacturers and sourcers, and they don't even want to have they don't want to even advertise or promote their products. They've created their brand, and they manufacture it, and then they get it to the distributor to rationally do with what they do with it. So they don't have their, you know, kind of anybody in house that's thinking about, you know, that other than that one distributor relationship. That's it.
Yeah. So actually, since you brought it up, I will say, add a little bit of nuance to this conversation, which is that, so you mentioned the store that I sold is called Aria Chairs. You guys listening can go look it up. If you want, ariachairs.com. We sold salon furniture. The biggest thing was like pedicure chairs and manicure tables, that kind of stuff. And interestingly, some of those suppliers did sell direct to consumer, and they had their own websites. And some people might see that and think, oh no, I'm worried about competing with the manufacturer. They don't mind at all. They're happy to take their sales. I honestly don't know how they got their sales. I think just because they've built a brand and people know them and they wind up on their website. Yeah. But the internet is such a broad faceted place. And they don't, like I said, even though they're taking plenty of orders from their website, they're not really that interested in learning how to get these other sales channels. So we, as marketers, that's essentially what we are. We have a much broader reach, much broader and much deeper in specific sales channels that we learn how to do.
And if you went to one of those people that is a supplier that has their own website, they don't have any content up other than their own content. Whereas your site might feature, you know, a comparison of three different like things and say, these are good for this, that's, you know, you may offer people a comparison, high price, medium price, low price, depending on your needs. And so people will always come to you.
Yeah. Like these people will go to trade shows and they'll present, and some of them have decent looking websites that are they're building their brand. There is a difference between brand building and direct response marketing, which is primarily what I was more into. But that's where there's a difference. They want, you know, if we want to use the big names, I think Nike wants you to buy their shoes. They don't give a crap where you buy them, right? They want to, they're spending
not
a lot of money.
Not at all.
Yeah, they're building their name, right? And so on a much, much smaller scale, that's what these suppliers are doing as well. They're building their name. They want the consumers to know that they're out there and that they're the best option. They're not intending to be the marketers and the salespeople and all of that.
Sure.
It's just...
Yeah, one thing that we've done during the pandemic and that we're going to keep doing is for our top selling SKUs, we've reached out to our suppliers and offered to pre-purchase these SKUs. And we're getting discounts of 7 to 10%. When we say we want you to reserve 8, 10, 16, whatever of these for us, you hold on to them. We'll just tell you when to ship them and where to ship them. Okay. And that can oftentimes raise my margins by, 50%, by doing that. And we think that it builds, kind of a different relationship where, now the chief financial officer at that supplier knows that we're supplying capital to them. We're taking some of the risk out of their inventory from them. And, we think it deepens the relationship. And by the way, it certainly helps us. Now, if we know that we're going to sell that inventory in 45 days, there's no reason for us not to do that. So why wouldn't we do that? So we think that that's a strategy that's not as, it's certainly not as being, as fully committed as putting stuff on a boat from someplace and owning the inventory on the one hand. On the other hand, it's not as capital light as kind of the pure drop shipping model, but we think it has some benefits, particularly on the really, really high volume SKUs. But there's no way any of these suppliers want to deal with the end customer. That, we provide a very valuable service for that. And, as I mentioned, I think you can throw rocks at this strategy because the margins are lower. But, I slept like a baby every night during the pandemic and didn't worry about inventory or warehouse costs or the health of the people in the warehouse. I did worry about my people that were overseas, but they weren't on my facility. They were in their home, generally, working from where they were. So I think there's, just circling back to your original question, I think there's huge benefits, in this business model. And I don't think that DTC is a threat at all.
I love it. And we've got to wrap it up. We've been going extra long today. This has been so much fun. And, for those who are on the fence, take some action. Like we've been talking about, prices are going up and they're going to continue to go up. So if you wait, you're going to pay more.
And I also think, prices are going up, but they're going up for the right reasons.
Right.
When you're a venture capitalist, you make an early investment in something and you invest more as your thesis plays out.
Right.
Where will this e-commerce adoption end? We don't know. It's a much safer bet today than it was a year ago, to be honest. It's a much better bet. And I've said this before, Isaac, and I'd love to hear your take on this. But, when I got into this business 5 years ago, five and change years ago, when we bought our first two sites, there are only a certain, what I always wanted to do is do this analytically, going back to my day job, is think about kind of what are the constraints to this model, right? And the biggest constraint to this model is good suppliers. And, because the suppliers aren't going to have an unlimited number of people to deal with. They're just not. Okay. Yeah. My suppliers aren't. Okay. So they're going to at some point say, we don't need another supplier. We're having problems keeping in stock now. So we're not going to sign you up. So, when anything you buy today, you could be locked in and, they may not, take additional suppliers. Now, there are other niches.
Additional dealers.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Additional dealers. Yeah. They're just not going to take them. There are plenty of niches where they're taking all kinds of dealers. So, there's still opportunity to go out and build sites today, but in some places they're not. Now, maybe they will suddenly find themselves with a lot of stock and want to shift tactically or strategically to have, more folks in e-commerce, and they'll open that up. But You know, I think that if you buy a site, you somewhat have a moat around that in that you already have a relationship with these suppliers.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's totally right. Worth. I think, you know, we'll see the market is shifting constantly. I am actually, I've been saying that I'm not in e-commerce anymore, but that's actually not true. I do have a drop shipping store that I put on pause for, it's over a year and a half now, and I have a partner. Shout out, Gavin, you rock, dude. We're getting that restarted. And this man has been signing up suppliers like nothing I have ever seen. He That's awesome. Is a beast. He's signing up more suppliers than I even knew existed. And so certainly there is opportunity, certainly, for people who are building from scratch. But the business that I sold, in part of the reason that I sold that is because, not part of the reason I sold, but one of the things that made it attractive was that some of these suppliers are kind of difficult to establish a relationship with. And some of them are like, no thanks, we have enough already. And so if you want to sell that brand, well, good luck, or buy my business, which is what happened. So yeah, there, you're going to see definitely some of both on that front.
Yeah, big. It's a big opportunity to already have that relationship and be able to you know, piggyback off of that. And then, you know, I think it's also, you know, when you come in and you say, look, I've done this before and I've got three or four strategies that can help you do more, then that supplier then looks at you, you know, really differently than maybe the original owner or the last owner. And you say, well, you know, I've done this before and, you know, we want to work with you and partner with you, help you grow your brand. And this is, you know, we've got, you know, these things that we're going to do around that. But by the way, we also need some help from you to execute these things. And, I've got a couple of people that I'm working with really intensively right now. And the suppliers are really, really open to hearing that. I mean, you know, it's competitive in the supplier world too. And so when they find people that don't treat them like, you know, kind of, you know, casually and are really committed to helping them grow their business and grow their brand, you know, they take notice. So it's win-win.
Yep. Awesome. Well, Ian, this has been so great. I want to thank you, first of all, for your time. We've gone over quite a bit today. This has been so much fun. If people want to reach out, they want to learn more about what you do, where would you suggest they go? And I know that you've got a special piece of information for people Sure. who really do want to, you know, it's great to talk about buying businesses, but as it's even better to have somebody who can walk you through it. And like you said, you are really getting into and enjoying mentoring people and showing them the ropes. So Sure. where would you suggest people go?
Yeah. So my blog is professionalwebsiteinvestors.com. And that's where you see kind of the comment. And, you know, we just published some pieces that I think are forward looking into 2021, specifically one on the topic we just talked about, why we think that e-commerce sites are so attractive today and will be great investments in 2021. And then, you know, I have published, worked with a marketing company to talk a little bit about this mentoring program that I have, which I'll give you a link, Isaac, for your website, but that's at professionalwebsiteinvestors.info. And so there you can find out a little bit about this program and kind of what the, you know, kind of the moving pieces are. And that's a, you know, a 9 or 10 minute video that talks about the kind of the key fundamentals of why this is such a attractive thing to do today.
Awesome. I love it. Thanks so much, Ian. Best wishes.
Isaac,
we'll
a pleasure.
Have to catch up soon.
Yeah. I look forward to it. Thanks for having me again. It's been, you know, it's been too long and it was a crazy, crazy year, crazy good. But it was a crazy year. And thanks for publishing all the great content that you do, because I'm a big podcast listener when I walk and you're always in my ear. So I appreciate that.
Aw, thanks, man. Absolutely.
Yeah. Good to see you.
Really, really appreciate it. Huge thanks to Ian for
for coming back on the show and going deep into some of these topics, and especially his outlook for e-commerce. I think it's not really a surprise, but there is just more evidence for what we already know. So what are you going to do about it? That's the question. If you've learned something new, if you found this episode valuable, make sure you share this episode with a friend. And lastly, before we head out, if you need help getting your bookkeeping done, take the stress off and just have my team do it. Just go to nextlevelecommerce.co/books and schedule a free call with me. Again, that's nextlevelecommerce.co/books. And I look forward to talking with you. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll see you next Tuesday.
Thank you for listening to Next Level E-Commerce. Be sure to subscribe so you won't miss out on the next story.